Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Cavanaugh Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down
at the Roundtable. Welcome back as we continue our recap discussion for the 6th annual NICE project.
I didn't mention Dracula in my religion spirituality movie because, again, Dracula is so crazy because we're dealing with this supernatural entity who I think we could safely say represents evil, you know, if you want to look at it in terms of Christian thought, or, you know, British Bram Stoker Christian colonial era thought. Dracula definitely represents evil. And, you know, it is no accident that is things like crosses that Dracula cannot bear, you know, Christian crosses. Well, okay. You know, so, I mean, I think that the whole religion thing in Dracula is almost so campy and fun that you almost forget to take it seriously and really discuss how it plays a part in the storytelling. But I do encourage everybody to go back to the book and read Dracula and kind of, you know, extrapolate some of that as you're analyzing the rest of the book. Analyze the religious, you know, qualities in it too, because they are there, right?
Right, that it is a little campy.
Yeah. Well,
but
you know,
at the same time, if you look at it symbolically.
Yes.
I guess that's embrace the camp.
Exactly.
I think the analogy is really interesting about what is the role of temptation in our lives.
Oh, yes.
How can we slowly be seduced by something that we know we shouldn't do, whether that be an addiction? I mean, let's take it out of this, you know, vampire realm and put it into something that's a little bit more real life. You know, how are you kind of slowly seduced into that? And I think it does take it, you know, several steps further than what real life is.
Yeah.
you can't say no, because there are points at which Mina wants to say no, and her consent is absolutely taken away.
Right.
And whereas I believe in my own spiritual life that you can say no.
Yeah. Well,
you know, you do have some will in your own spiritual decision.
Yeah.
Here, it's just the devil made me do it.
Exactly. And that seductive path, journey, if you will, the journey of seduction, and not being able to say no, you know, when you're drawn and attracted to something, you know, or someone, it's, we did talk a little bit about that when we talked about domestic abuse, you know, because that's oftentimes exactly what happens when people kind of get sucked into a abusive relationship. At the beginning, they have no idea that's where it's going. And it is just, you know, it's a gradual kind of seduction. And so I feel like whether we're talking about religion and spirituality or human relationships, there's so much in Dracula that we did talk about and we didn't get to talk about, but all of our books are good for that kind of stuff, I feel like. Yeah.
And I think your points about Beth are really interesting about the, is that a fair reward for her faithfulness?
Yeah.
And as you pointed out before, she does wrestle with the fact that she knows she's going to die young.
Mm-hmm.
She knows she has this disease.
Mm-hmm.
And like she in the middle of the night's crying, and Joe doesn't know why she's crying. Like, is she brokenhearted over Lori? I don't know what's
going on here.
So we know that she is really wrestled with it. And you pointed out that, you know, we think of Beth as kind of a character who's very childlike, but that she's come to this very mature realization of reconciling her fate, reconciling her spirituality and her relationship with God.
Well, it's the ultimate mature thought, right? In coming to terms with your own mortality and embracing it. And so for me, I think I said in past podcast episodes that for me, Beth is the most mature character in all of our books, despite the fact that she's the one that dies so young. She goes through her own dark night of the soul, if you will, on those during that time period where Joe thinks that Beth is in love with Lori or something, and yet she's really, Beth is trying to come to terms with the fact that she's dying and she's not going to see her loved ones, you know, the rest of their lives. She's never going to be married. She's not going to have children. I mean, all the things that a normal girl her age would be looking forward to, she is not going to experience, and she has to come to terms with that, and she does. And for me, a lot of that, I think, is her faith in God and her religion sustains her, that she believes she's going to heaven and she's going to be with God. I think that does sustain her in those dark nights when she has to, you know, come to terms with her own mortality. But I do feel like her character is amazingly strong and mature, and the only one in all of our books that actually comes to that level of maturity and self-awareness.
Yeah, I think that we have several characters scattered throughout our books that kind of are examples of, hey, I'm just going to accept God's will. Mm-hmm. And we have several characters that are like, no, I don't like this. I am going to fight to change things.
Exactly.
Scarlet.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that represents real life struggles that we all have. Do we accept what happens to us?
Mm-hmm.
Do we fight it?
Mm-hmm.
When do we do each?
Yeah.
And does that make us accepting of God's plan, if we happen to believe in a God, of course?
Yeah.
Or, you know, at what point are we a passive victim? At what point do we just come to reconcile?
Right. And all of that means that these four books in some way address great philosophical, and I mean great as in historic, philosophical arguments, conflicts, questions. And I love that. You know, we didn't even get to talk about philosophy in terms of these books, but they all got it, man. These are good books. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One last thing that I just want to add, because you know I love Jane Eyre now for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is that idea of Jane knows herself morally in the middle of the book,
mm-hmm.
when, okay, I have the love of my life, but I feel for my own good. I know who I am, and if I were to stay with Rochester in this adulterous relationship, I feel like I would be violating morally who I am.
Yeah.
That I feel there's a spiritual element, there's just a personal strength coming from that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's always been something that I appreciated about her and that I see as extremely relevant in a modern relationship.
Oh, totally, yeah.
Who you are,
mm-hmm.
where you stand,
mm-hmm.
what are you morally willing to do, morally not willing to do,
mm-hmm.
and part of that's philosophical, part of that could
yep.
be spiritual for you, again, depending on your beliefs,
mm-hmm.
and I just always thought that's great.
I agree
She's
with
such
you.
A role model for me there.
I agree with you on that. I have to say that our discussions made me appreciate that aspect of her more than I did when we chose the book originally. This has not ever been one of my favorite Bronte books in a lot of ways, but I've grown to appreciate it so much more, and that particular reason is probably one of the most important reasons that I see it differently now, the book, because I feel like you're absolutely right. I feel like Jane, of a lot of our characters, she knows her moral boundaries, and she will not violate those for God nor man, right? I mean, honestly, she is, talk about a streak of stubbornness. I mean, she's got a streak of stubbornness, but it's a good one. It protects her and it keeps her righteous in her own self. And I do agree with you that I can look at my own life, you know, in the modern world, relate, and you know, the times that I have not stuck to my personal boundaries, whether they be based on spirituality or something else, those moments have not served me well. Bad things happened, right? So, you know, I admire that this is a character written this way, that she has that moral strength, if you want to call it moral strength, I don't know, internal strength, self-awareness strength, whatever you want to call it. Because everybody's going to see different things in the books, but whatever that is, that streak of iron strength in her is really commendable, and I like the way it plays out in the story with her romance with Rochester and with all that stuff that, what I call that crapola that St. John throws at her. You know, I think that Jane stands strong, you know, from the middle of the book forward. She knows who she is, and she sticks to that. And I do think that's remarkable and wonderful. So thank you, Sarah E., for really fighting for Jane Eyre to be on our list this year, because I evolved in my feelings about Jane Eyre. the character and the book.
Our
yeah.
appreciation of me for Scarlett and you for Jane.
Yeah, I think we were both pretty happy with Dracula and Little Women. We both, you know, thought, oh yeah, those will be good. But I think The Gone with the Wind and the Jane Eyre, we really, I think a lot of our focus in our previous recordings came down to those two books because we both felt so strongly about them, positively and negatively, and getting to that shared space with those two books was certainly a pleasure and a joy for me. So thank you.
thank you, absolutely.
Join us next time as we continue our recap discussion for the 6th annual NICE project. This has been At the Roundtable with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org. We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.